Fourth Interlude, The Moments of Consciousness Model. The model of conscious experience you learned about in the first interlude introduced the ideas of attention and peripheral awareness. While that model was helpful for working through the first four stages, it was incomplete. As you progress in your practice, you'll need more detailed models of the mind to help make sense of your new experiences. Here we present the Moments of Consciousness model. It builds on what you've already learned, recasting many of the concepts already used. This model is drawn from the Theravada Buddhist Abhidhamma and includes some elaborations and expansions by a later Buddhist school known as the Yogacara. This interlude and the next take ideas about the mind from both these sources and explore them using modern terminology and a more science-based framework. Keep in mind that this model is intended to help you understand both your own experiences and the meditation instructions better. Don't bother with trying to decide whether the description is literally true or not. As your meditation skills mature, you'll have plenty of time to decide what you think based on your own experiences. What's more important is that the model is useful for making sense of and working more effectively in your practice. Moments of Consciousness. Our everyday conscious experience of the world, the thoughts and sensations that arise and pass away, appear to flow together seamlessly from one moment to the next. However, according to the Moments of Consciousness model, this is an illusion. If we observed closely enough, we would find that experience is actually divided into individual moments of consciousness. These conscious mind moments occur one at a time, in much the same way that a motion picture film is actually divided into separate frames. Because the frames pass so quickly and are so numerous, motion on the film seems fluid. Similarly, these discrete moments of consciousness are so brief and numerous that they seem to form one continuous and uninterrupted stream of consciousness. According to this model, consciousness is a series of discrete events rather than continuous, because we can only be conscious of information coming from one sense organ at a time. Moments of seeing are distinct from moments of hearing, moments of smelling from moments of touch, and so on. Therefore, each is a separate mental event with its own unique content. Moments of visual experience can be interspersed with moments of auditory, tactile, mental, and other sensory experience, but no two can happen at the same time. For example, a moment of visual consciousness must end before you can have a thought, a moment of mental consciousness about what you've just seen. It is only because these different moments replace each other so quickly that seeing, hearing, thinking, and so forth all seem to happen at the same time. The Moments of Consciousness model posits that within each of these moments, nothing changes. They are truly like freeze frames. Even our experience of watching something move is the result of many separate moments of visual consciousness, one rapidly following the next. Therefore, all conscious experience, without exception, consists of individual, brief moments, each containing a single, static chunk of information. In that sense, we can say that each mind moment provides only a single object of consciousness. Because moments of consciousness coming from different sense organs contain such different information, consciousness is less like a film in which every frame is similar to the last, and more like a string of differently colored beads. While this model is quite different from how we usually think about consciousness, it's not just a nice theory someone thought up. The basic premise of distinct moments of consciousness arising and passing away in sequence is based on the actual meditation experiences of advanced practitioners from across a broad range of traditions. It's an experience that the composers of the Abhidhamma who formulated this model either had firsthand or learned about from other advanced meditators. It's also an experience you yourself will have in the later stages. Yet long before you do, this model will help you, just as it has helped other practitioners for over 2 millennia. 7 different types of moments of consciousness. In this model, the different types of moments of consciousness vary according to which of our senses provides the object in a given moment. In all, there are 7 kinds of moments. The first 5 are obvious, since they correspond to the physical senses, sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch. The 6th category, maybe less obvious, is called the mind sense, meaning it includes mental objects like thoughts and emotions. Finally, there is a 7th type of consciousness, called binding consciousness, that integrates the information provided by the other senses. Let's take a closer look at these different kinds of moments of consciousness. Of the 5 physical senses, the last on the list, touch, properly known as somatic sensation, is more complicated and diverse than the first 4. It would be accurate to say that the somatosensory category is actually comprised of many different senses. For example, there's the category of skin sensations, which includes not just touch, but also pressure, movement, and vibration. There's a separate category that includes things like temperature, pain, tickle, itch, and some sexual sensations. Then there's what's called proprioception, the sense that informs us about the position, location, and movement of the parts of our body. Sensations of muscle tension, deep visceral sensations, and the physical sensations we associate with emotions each constitute other distinct categories of sense experience. Finally, the sensations of acceleration, rotation, balance, and gravity make up yet another category completely overlooked by the classical 5 senses. From a physiological perspective, each of these somatosensory categories is actually a unique sense unto itself, served by its own subsystem within the central nervous system. According to the moments of consciousness model, information from no 2 of these somatic sense categories can occupy the same moment of consciousness either. Just as we can't see an object and hear a sound at the same time, we can't, for example, sense emotion and feel pain at the same time. So there are, in fact, more than 5 different kinds of physical senses. It's the same situation with the mind sense. It was traditionally treated as a single sense through which we become conscious of mental objects. Yet in reality, memories, emotions, and abstract thoughts, for example, each derive from distinctly different brain processes, and each provides a unique kind of information. Therefore, information from 2 different mental categories can't share the same moment of consciousness either. You can't solve an algebra problem while at the same time remembering a childhood pet. We have to recognize that both the mind sense and the somatic sense are actually blanket labels encompassing many sense categories, each conveying its own unique kind of information. However, for the sake of simplicity, we will ignore these diverse senses and just refer to 6 basic categories of moments of consciousness corresponding to the sight, smell, taste, touch, hearing, and mental senses. However, if the contents of one moment are gone before the next arises, how do these distinct kinds of information ever get integrated with each other in conscious experience? How do we ever put it all together so we can understand what's actually happening? The answer is that the content of many separate moments provided by the first 6 sense categories get briefly stored in a kind of working memory, where they are combined and integrated with each other. Then, the product of this integration is projected into consciousness as yet another distinct type of mind moment, the combining or binding moment of consciousness. Consider the experience of hearing someone speak. When the contents from visual and auditory moments of consciousness have been combined, binding moments are produced. These binding moments match the sounds we hear to the specific objects we see in our visual field. In other words, Our subjective experience is hearing words come from a particular person's mouth. This kind of mental activity also occurs when we watch a movie. Notice how your mind automatically attributes particular voices to specific characters, when in fact the sound originates from speakers in the theater walls. The sound may even be coming from behind you. And, of course, the reason ventriloquists can fool us is because binding moments don't always put the information together in an accurate way. Binding moments are integrated perceptions combining information from the other six senses to produce complex representations of what's happening within and around us. They are regarded as a seventh kind of moment of consciousness, distinct from the other six. Therefore, the seven different kinds of moments of consciousness are sight, sound, smell, taste, somatosensory, and mental, plus the binding moment. Moments of attention and moments of peripheral awareness. Recall from the first interlude that all conscious experience gets filtered through either attention or awareness. They form two distinct ways of knowing the world. But how do attention and awareness fit into this more in-depth model? If all conscious experience consists entirely of the seven kinds of mind moments, what place is there for attention and awareness? It's simple. Any moment of consciousness, whether it's a moment of seeing, hearing, thinking, etc., takes the form of either a moment of attention or a moment of peripheral awareness. Consider a moment of seeing. It could be either a moment of seeing as part of attention or a moment of seeing as part of peripheral awareness. These are the two options. If it's a moment of awareness, it will be broad, inclusive, and holistic, regardless of which of the seven categories it belongs to. A moment of attention, on the other hand, will isolate one particular aspect of experience to focus on. If we examine moments of attention and moments of awareness a bit closer, we see two major differences. First, moments of awareness can contain many objects, while moments of attention contain only a few. Second, the content of moments of awareness undergoes relatively little mental processing, while the content of moments of attention is subject to much more in-depth processing. Of course, these two are not so neatly divided experientially, but understanding these differences will help you appreciate how each functions and their different purposes in organizing subjective reality. Consider the first difference, many objects versus only a few, in terms of hearing. Our ears take in everything audible from our environment. Then our brain processes that information and puts it together in two different ways. First, it creates an auditory background that includes more or less all the different sounds our ears have detected. When that's projected into consciousness, it becomes a moment of auditory peripheral awareness. The other way the brain processes that information is to pick out just some part, say one person's voice, from the total sound in our awareness. When projected into consciousness, that isolated sound becomes the content of a moment of auditory attention. So the brain has two modes of information processing. One creates moments of awareness with many objects, while the other creates moments of attention with just a few. These two modes apply to every kind of sensory information, not just hearing. For example, say you're sitting on a cabin deck in the mountains, gazing out at the view. Each moment of visual awareness will include a variety of objects, mountains, trees, birds, and sky, all at the same time. Auditory moments of awareness will include all the various sounds that make up the audible background, birdsong, wind in the trees, a babbling brook, and so forth, again, all at the same time. On the other hand, moments of visual attention might be restricted just to the bird you're watching on a nearby branch. Auditory attention might include only the sounds the birds are making. Even when your attention is divided among several things at once, perhaps you're knitting or whittling a piece of wood while you sit, moments of attention are still limited to a small number of objects. Finally, binding moments of attention and binding moments of awareness take the content from the preceding sensory moments and combine them into a whole. Sitting on the deck, looking out at the mountain while carving a piece of wood. Now, let's consider the second difference, the degree of mental processing in moments of awareness versus moments of attention. Individual moments of awareness provide information about a lot of things at once, but the information has only been minimally processed. The result is our familiar experience of peripheral awareness of many things in the background. However, these moments of awareness do include some simple interpretations of sense data. You may be aware that the sounds you hear are from traffic, or that the things in the background of your visual field are trees. These simple concepts help evaluate and categorize all that information, contributing to our understanding of the present context. Although these preliminary interpretations don't usually lead to any kind of action, some part of this information is frequently referred to attention for more analysis. Other times, say when the sound of traffic suddenly includes screeching tires, the information in peripheral awareness can trigger an automatic action, thought, or emotion, any of which can then become an object of attention. Attention's job, on the other hand, is to isolate specific objects in order to analyze and interpret them in more detail. Moments of attention contain conceptual representations, usually from the mind sense. These may be simple concepts related to our immediate experience, actions, thoughts, or emotions, but more often they're elaborate concepts constructed from those simpler concepts. Let's use another example to help clarify the difference in processing between attention and awareness. Imagine that you've just heard an unusual sound. Peripheral awareness may initially attribute that sound to a footstep on the stairs. That is to say, the actual sound has already been replaced with the concept, someone is walking up the stairs, and peripheral awareness has referred that information to your faculty of attention for further analysis. Notice that it's not the actual sound that becomes the object of attention, but rather the idea of a person walking up the stairs. During the moments of consciousness that follow, attention filters through stored information to interpret the significance of someone coming up the stairs. Once attention arrives at a conclusion, it can then initiate an appropriate response. There is one more subtle difference between moments of awareness and attention worth mentioning. The content of moments of awareness usually comes from the physical senses, while the content of moments of attention usually comes from the mind sense. What had been a sound in awareness, simply attributed to traffic, becomes a concept like traffic noise when made into an object of attention. However, this is only a general rule. There are times when moments of attention hold information coming directly from one of the physical senses. But even when a sensory object does become an object of attention, it is quickly replaced by a more complex, highly processed, conceptual formation. For example, paying attention to a tangible object like breath sensations usually generates many more moments of consciousness from the mind sense than from the sense of touch directly, especially for beginning meditators. Moments of attention that include actual sensory information are actually few and far between, greatly outnumbered by those containing conceptual objects such as breath, air, in, out, and nose. Only if you diligently practice following the breath, observing ever finer details, will you train your mind to produce more moments of attention to actual breath sensations. Likewise, there are instances when moments of peripheral awareness involving the mind sense occur. They involve things like a growing feeling of annoyance or a suspicion that we've forgotten something. Generally, though, people have less peripheral awareness of what's going on in their minds than they do of things in the external environment. This is especially true of the untrained mind. Mindfulness training involves increasing the moments of introspective awareness, moments of peripheral awareness of mental objects, and states and activities of the mind. Non-perceiving mind moments. Non-perceiving mind moments are another important part of the moments of consciousness model. These are potential rather than actual moments of consciousness. No perception occurs because none of the sense organs provides them with any content, but nevertheless they are real mental events, replacing perceived moments of consciousness, and they are associated with a feeling of pleasure. Non-perceiving mind moments are interspersed among perceiving moments of consciousness. According to the model, one of the attributes of every moment of consciousness is a kind of life force or vital energy. Non-perceiving mind moments carry much less of this vital energy than do perceiving moments of consciousness. Therefore, the energy level of the mind depends on the ratio of perceiving to non-perceiving moments. The greater the proportion of non-perceiving mind moments in a given period, the more dullness we experience. In daily life, sensory input constantly enters the mind, continuously stimulating and maintaining its energy level. However, as we pointed out in the first interlude, even this ordinary level of consciousness involves a considerable amount of dullness, as shown by our capacity for increased awareness and alertness under certain circumstances, like in an emergency. This means that ordinary conscious experience includes a significant proportion of non-perceiving mind moments. Dullness grows even stronger if that proportion increases. Conscious intention. So far, we have focused mainly on the passive aspect of these moments of consciousness, perception. Yet there is an active component in every moment of consciousness as well, conscious intention. We intend to observe the meditation object. We intend to direct attention away from distractions and return to the meditation object. We intend to sustain attention on it. We intend to engage fully with its details. Intention plays an important role in each moment of consciousness. It determines the objects of subsequent moments of consciousness. The stronger our intention to attend to a particular object, the more moments of attention will subsequently be focused on that object. So, if you intend to watch the breath, the next few moments of consciousness are more likely to take the breath as their object. Although intention is part of every perceiving moment, awareness of these intentions is usually subliminal, unless, of course, the intention itself becomes the object of a moment of consciousness. Intention also exerts a powerful influence on how many of the upcoming mind moments will be perceiving rather than non-perceiving. A strong intention to perceive anything results in more perceiving moments, and vice versa. This, in turn, has a strong effect on the activity and energy levels of the mind. In contrast, intention is completely absent from non-perceiving mind moments. Therefore, they are also non-intending mind moments. Just as the intention of perceiving moments leads to more perceiving moments, the lack of intention in non-perceiving moments results in more non-perceiving moments, meaning dullness grows stronger. Applying the moments of consciousness model to meditation. Let's look at what might happen during a single breath cycle in meditation using the moments of consciousness model, starting with the in-breath. The subjective experience is one of fairly continuous attention to the breath sensations, but with subtle distractions such as knee pain or feelings of restlessness standing out from the background of peripheral awareness. What's actually happening, according to the model, is that a large number of separate moments of consciousness are arising and passing away during the course of the in-breath. Most are moments of attention with the changing sensations of the breath as their object, but others have knee pain, thoughts about lunch, or feelings of restlessness as their object. attention isn't actually moving between the breath and these distractions. Instead, successive moments of attention hold different objects. Interspersed among these moments of attention are moments of peripheral awareness of other bodily sensations, sounds, thoughts, and emotions, creating the background. Then, during the out-breath, if the pain in your knee draws your attention, a greater proportion of moments of attention are devoted to knee pain than to the breath. Subsequently, the pain is now a gross distraction, and the breath slips away into the background. Each moment of attention to the pain also carries a subconscious intention for subsequent moments to stay on the pain. Because of your training up to this stage, as you begin the next in-breath, moments of introspective peripheral awareness alert you to the presence of pain as a gross distraction. You counter it with your conscious intention to make the breath the focus again, generating more moments of attention to the breath. Now you're attending more closely to the breath, with a strong intention not to pay attention to your knee. Knee pain fades into the background, and the breath sensations become sharper and clearer once more. Forgetting, distraction, and exclusive attention. According to this model, the phenomena of forgetting, gross and subtle distractions, and exclusive focus all exist along a continuum. Where each is located on that continuum depends on only one thing: the proportion of moments of attention in a given period whose object is the sensations of the breath versus some distraction. With forgetting, there are no moments of attention with the breath as the object, only moments with distractions as the object. With gross distractions, there are more moments devoted to the distraction than to the breath. With subtle distractions, there are more moments devoted to the breath than to the distraction. Finally, the exclusive focus of an advanced practitioner lies on the far end of the spectrum, because all content is related to a single, clearly defined theme. Distractions rarely, if ever, become objects of moments of attention. As you can determine, stable attention simply means that most of your moments of attention are devoted to the meditation object. How many moments of peripheral awareness you have has nothing to do with it. However, the process of developing stable attention required that you work with introspective peripheral awareness to overcome forgetting and gross distractions. In other words, you use mindfulness, the optimal interaction between moments of attention and moments of awareness, to gradually develop stable attention. Mindfulness, peripheral awareness, and attention. Mindfulness means that in whatever situation we find ourselves, the balance between moments of attention and moments of awareness is just right. Whenever we lose this balance, we lose mindfulness. The solution to any loss of mindfulness is to increase the total power of consciousness. That means increasing the proportion of actively perceiving versus non-perceiving mind moments. To do this, we have to convert non-perceiving mind moments into perceiving moments of attention and awareness. This increase leads to a more efficient balance between attention and awareness, allowing us to remain mindful in most situations. If consciousness is more powerful, we'll have enough perceiving mind moments to sustain peripheral awareness while keeping attention on whatever task we're doing, even when multitasking. To make this point clear, let's take, as an example, people with attention deficit disorder, which is basically a form of involuntary multitasking. People with ADD will definitely have a harder time increasing peripheral awareness in the earlier stages, since their attention is so unstable to begin with. But by increasing the total number of perceiving mind moments, they can generate enough moments of awareness to achieve a balance of attention and awareness. By doing so, they're as able as anyone to achieve a high level of mindfulness. But is mindfulness compatible with single-pointedness, the ability to focus on the meditation object to the exclusion of everything else? The answer is yes. Even while moments of attention are focused exclusively on one thing, we can still have enough moments of peripheral awareness intermixed to remain mindful. Again, we need enough conscious power to have the necessary awareness accompanying attention. Otherwise, as the number of moments devoted to objects of attention increase, the number of moments of awareness must drop, because we simply won't have enough moments of consciousness available to go around. Up to this point, you've been cultivating moments of peripheral awareness that were mostly extrospective. Now, from stage 5 onward, you'll practice increasing the moments of introspective awareness, eventually leading to a new level of metacognitive introspective awareness. That is, you will be aware of your state of mind in every moment, even as you focus on the breath. Dullness. Dullness is determined by the number of non-perceiving moments mixed in with perceiving moments. As the proportion of non-perceiving moments increases, we experience more subtle dullness. Increase it even more, and we experience strong dullness. When the proportion becomes great enough, we fall asleep. When all perceiving moments have disappeared, we are completely unconscious. Unconsciousness and deep sleep are at one end of a continuum. At the other end, where all your mind moments are actively perceiving moments of consciousness, we experience the ultimate degree of alertness. As we pointed out earlier, ordinary consciousness includes a significant proportion of non-perceiving mind moments. Therefore, the different degrees of alertness of everyday life are actually varying degrees of stable, subtle dullness. That means we are already in subtle dullness even before we sit down to meditate. The only reason the subtle dullness of daily life is stable is because there are enough different stimuli constantly streaming in, producing new moments of consciousness, to keep us alert. But when we start meditating, we cut off much of that stimulation by turning away from sensations and thoughts toward a relatively boring meditation object. When the proportion of perceiving moments of consciousness starts falling, the energy level of the mind falls as well. And remember, non-perceiving moments are also non-intending moments, so they don't generate any intent to perceive in subsequent moments. Therefore, even more perceiving moments become non-perceiving and non-intending moments. If there's no intervention, this cycle turns the stable, subtle dullness of daily life into the progressive, subtle dullness of meditation. If this isn't checked, it becomes strong dullness and drowsiness. In stage 3, you learned to maintain a balance between attention and peripheral awareness so you didn't become too inwardly focused and fall asleep. These moments of extrospective awareness helped keep your mind energized. In stage 4, you learned to use the power of intention to increase the energy level of the mind enough to overcome progressive, subtle dullness before it became strong dullness. The mind is now able to sustain a state of stable, subtle dullness during meditation, just as it does in daily life. In stage 5, you will learn ways to reduce the proportion of non-perceiving moments and to increase the proportion of perceiving moments. You will have less subtle dullness, more conscious power, and therefore greater mindfulness. A strong intention to perceive in every moment of consciousness is the real antidote to dullness in meditation. Powerful imagery, visions, and a sense of having experienced something profound often occur with strong dullness. These aren't actually a part of dullness itself. Rather, the large proportion of non-perceiving, non-intending moments creates an opportunity for deep subconscious content to well up into consciousness. With so many mind moments unoccupied by external stimuli or intentional objects, otherwise, subconscious material can become the object of perceiving moments. Dreaming happens in the same way. Drumming, chanting, repetitive bodily movements, and other shamanic practices are used to purposely induce the same kind of openness and receptivity. However, in these cases, the practitioner usually has some prior intention for these visionary objects to arise. The Moments of Consciousness model will prove useful for understanding both the problem of subtle dullness and how to overcome it in Stage 5. It will also prove useful for the later stages. Remember, this model and the others presented in this book were originally developed by meditators for meditators to help them achieve the ultimate goals of spiritual practice.